Hello and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello and welcome to another episode of the MBOM podcast. I am so excited that you've decided to join me for today's episode of the show. And today on the podcast, I am very excited to be joined by Henry Winslow. Henry is a dedicated yoga practitioner, and he is also a yoga teacher and the founder of the Henry Yoga app, which is a 40-day program for anyone looking to get serious about yoga, no matter their budget or schedule. And so on this episode of the podcast, Henry and I dive into Henry's journey through yoga, how he became a yoga teacher, what his career has been like. We talk a lot about the travels that he's done and traveling and teaching yoga. And then we also talk about creating his app, Henry Yoga, and the process that was like, why he created it, what he learned from it, and so much more. One thing that I think is really, really important for everyone here to know is that Henry and I actually recorded this pre-COVID-19. So Henry and I chatted back in late January before the global pandemic hit. And so if you hear us talking about anything that feels totally not normal for our new normal with the pandemic, please just know that that's the reason why. When we're speaking about travel, when we're talking about teaching, you know, things are just a little bit different. I think there's still a lot to get out of this episode, and I hope that you guys really enjoy hearing from Henry. Before we get there, just a quick word from our sponsor, OfferingTree. This episode is brought to you by OfferingTree. When you're a yoga teacher and you're trying to build your digital presence, it can be daunting, especially right now when you are trying to take your offerings online as fast as possible. OfferingTree set out to make creating your digital presence fun, easy, and affordable. With one account, you can create a website in minutes that has your schedule built right in. They also have email marketing tools to collect email addresses, send newsletters, and automated emails to your subscribers. It all works seamlessly together with one account and one subscription. Forget spending all your time and energy just trying to remember what account does what and what your login information is. On top of that, OfferingTree has an embedded scheduling feature, so if you already have a website that you love, you can use it for online payments and scheduling. They have also just announced that they now have Stripe integration so that people from Canada, the UK, Australia, and 30 plus countries can accept payments using OfferingTree. This is something that a lot of people have been asking for, and it is finally live. So that is super exciting. To learn more about what OfferingTree can do for your digital presence, visit offeringtree.com/MBOM. OfferingTree has been supporting MBOM for over a year now, and I not only love the product, but I also love the people. And OfferingTree is also providing special pricing for MBOM listeners. So be sure to visit offeringtree.com/MBOM to receive your discount. All right, here's the episode with Henry. Henry, welcome to the podcast today. I'm super excited to have you here with me.
Thanks for having me on, Amanda. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely. And where are you joining me from today?
Well, at the moment, I am in Richmond, Virginia, because I'm visiting my parents and picking up my cat. They've been babysitting my cat for the past, 3 months, 2.5 months while I've been traveling and in between homes.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So is Richmond like home, or where are you headed after with your cat?
Well, Richmond was home when I was growing up. This is where my parents live, and I was raised here. But in November, I moved out of my home, adult home in New York, and then went on a whole traveling and teaching spree through lots of different places. And now, this is my last little leg here before I go to California, where my wife and I are going to set up shop as our new home base in Los Angeles.
Awesome. There's so much exciting stuff there. And hopefully we'll have a chance to dive into that more, because I also travel and teach and run a business online. So hopefully we can dive into that a little bit. But before we get there, can you tell me a little bit about how you got into yoga and your background becoming a yoga teacher?
Of course, yeah. Well, let's see. When I first started practicing yoga, I was in college and I was a springboard diver. So I had an athletic background, and for once I went to New York to do an internship. And when I got there, I was still diving in college, but I didn't have access to boards or my coach. So one of my friends, who was a former teammate, actually recommended that I go try a yoga class, and he offered to bring me to one. And he said, "Henry, you're going to love yoga because you'll get to keep up your flexibility and strength. And there's like proprioception involved. And basically, it'll translate a lot of the skills from diving and help you to be ready for the boards next year." So I went with him to that first yoga class, which was at a gym. And he was right about everything that he said. But what I didn't really expect is that when I got on the mat and did these postures, these asanas, and these movements, I felt like it was something I had done before. It felt really familiar. And that was very intriguing to me, and it attracted me back. And I kept going to yoga classes. I mean, at the beginning, I was like going to yoga class and then boxing class the next day, just kind of like taking advantage of what the gym had to offer. But very soon, I was seeking out teachers and like following them around the city. The irony is that I went back to college the next year and I didn't even dive. But I did keep up my yoga practice, as you can probably expect. So I practiced for many, many years and resisted being a teacher, despite people, you know, naturally asking that question and encouraging me to teach. And I think I resisted it for a long time because I felt that somehow if I turned my practice, which was something that was so sacred and intimate and personal for me, into something that became more vocational, that it would compromise on that sacredness. And I was totally wrong about that. I found that teaching has become an extension of my practice and has really deepened my understanding of a lot of the more subtle aspects of yoga and the yamas and niyamas, essentially being there for other people and seeing the other as the self. But I started teaching yoga finally because I actually got tricked into it. It was kind of funny. One of my friends, who was a yoga teacher, he said, "Henry, I'm going to go down to..." I was living in Texas at the time. I was living in Austin, Texas. And he said, "I'm going to go down to this other town, which is like an hour away. And how would you like to come with me? And you can be my like demo boy. And I'll point out things on you. You know, people will be able to see it on your anatomy. And I'll pay you a couple $100 for this workshop. And you don't have to do anything other than just do the postures that I tell you to do." And I said, "Okay, sure." And then when I got down there, he was like, "So how do you want to do this? I figure I'll teach the first half, you teach the second half." And I was like, "Okay, I guess that's what's happening." And that was my first teaching gig.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That must have been... Were you like terrified by that, or how were you feeling in that moment?
In the moment, I felt like I definitely got the bait and switch, and I felt a little like, I don't know, not I just kind of thought it was funny, honestly. And I was like, "I guess I can do this. Sure." I mean, it wasn't... I had come up in the Bikram lineage, and I don't know how familiar you are with that. But in Bikram, the teachers teach the exact same postures, the same sequence. And technically, they should be teaching, according to who you speak to, the exact same words, the same script or dialogue every single class. And this was not a Bikram school, and it was not a Bikram context. So when I got there, I kind of felt like, okay, I don't have to do it the exact way. It's a little bit more free form. I can teach what I know. And it actually felt a little... it felt inviting and exciting in a way. So I embraced the challenge.
Amazing. I love that. And so then, can you tell me a little bit about your career? Like, how did you go from, you know, Henry at that point teaching that first class to, you know, where you are today?
Well, when I first taught that first class, at the time, I had no intention of being a yoga teacher because it wasn't even something I had planned to do that day. And I had a job in pharmaceutical advertising. And this was a job that I had taken right out of college. And up until that point, you know, my entire life had been preparing for the next step. you get good grades in school so that you can get into a good college, get good grades in college so that you can get the good job, and so on and so forth. And once I got to that job, that was kind of a reality check for me, because I took a look around and saw that people were much my senior, you know, much older, and they were still doing that. So it became clear that this is no longer a step toward the next thing. This is my life. And that truth kind of hit me heavily. And it made me very uncomfortable. And it made me realize that I had really been lost. It wasn't something that I was aware of at the time, that being pushed onto the next thing, to always be motivated by getting to the next step, made me never really embrace or appreciate where I was. And this is a lesson of yoga, right? To be present and to accept the here and now, and recognize that the here and now, the present moment, is the only thing that's real. But, you know, as I said, I was not really contextualized in yoga philosophy or even yoga practice at that time. And it hit hard. And I recognized that this is not something that I wanted to be doing. So fortunately, right around that time was the same time that yoga came into my life. So although I was not a yoga teacher yet, yoga practice was teaching me a lot about who I was. And I just think I was a daily practitioner. The only way I could get in my practice was to get there for 6 a.m. class or 6:30 a.m. class before work, because advertising keeps you there until ungodly hours of the night many times, and it's unpredictable. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, the practice started to strip away these narratives that I had about myself and reveal what was important to me. What were my principles? What were my values? And it wasn't long before I recognized that selling drugs, basically, you know, equipping the sales force of pharmaceutical companies to sell their blockbuster drugs, which basically profit off of people being sick, was not something that I really believed in. And in fact, I had resisted pharmaceuticals my whole life. You know, we all have our own tendencies. You could call it karma, if you like, or just personality types. But I never really liked medication. And it was very strange for me to be working in that field. But about 5 years or 6 years or so into my practice was when people started really pressuring me, for better or for worse, to teach yoga, or assuming that I was a yoga teacher. And then that opportunity came about to teach. And after that, I said, you know what, maybe I can teach yoga. And I started teaching yoga before I even had been certified, had done a teacher training, because studio owners where I was practicing were like, can you fill in? So I said, sure. And for a little while there, I was teaching while keeping up my job, sort of part-time, but working full-time in advertising. And eventually I got to the point where I thought, I just need to pull the plug on this. It's not going to be easy. There's going to be risk involved. I'm definitely going to take a pay cut, a significant one, but I can stop doing this work that doesn't feed my soul. And in fact, it's beyond neutral. It's actually negative. It's like a tax on my soul, to do something that's more meaningful to me, something that's more significant. So I quit that job and I started teaching, and I also started doing other things on the side to supplement the income, just kind of like trying out different side hustles and expressing my entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, I love hearing those stories. I'm curious, would you be willing to share what some of those side hustles were that you were working on?
Yeah, definitely. Another thing that I really got into around that time when I was living in Texas and I started teaching yoga was I really loved kombucha. I love to drink it. And there's a big kombucha culture in Austin, Texas. Like, there are all these little micro kombucha breweries. So I started experimenting with brewing my own kombucha. And what I found, I don't know how familiar you are with that process, but there's a whole fermentation process, and it takes some time for the mm-hmm. cultures to basically turn the sugars that you put into the brew into the healthy acids and so forth that give it that tang and buzz. And I created a system that sped up the process. And it was actually quite simple, but it involved making a little product, a little electronic product, an insulated rubber belt that you could wrap around your brew vessel to keep the temperature at the ideal range to stimulate fermentation. So I made that product into something that I could sell, and I created a little Amazon business. So I was sourcing the manufacturing of this brew belt in China, and then having them branded, like private labeled with a little brand that I created, and then shipped off to the Amazon warehouses to be fulfilled by Amazon. And that was my first experience with passive income, which taught me a lot. I no longer run that business, but it actually helped sustain me for about a year and a half or so before I decided to stop doing it.
Wow. That's so cool. Yeah. I guess I could say I've dabbled in making my own kombucha, and I've done it successfully, but you're right. The temperature stuff is very different. I'm from Canada, so obviously the temperature is very fluctuating there between the seasons. And then yeah. I've also brewed in Atlanta, Georgia, which is like total opposite, super warm. And then I also, you know, brewed kombucha while I lived in Mexico City, which is temperatures kind of all over the place too. And that is actually something that I found, like, a lot of your ability to brew and to brew it well, and how long it takes and how much sugar you give it and that sort of thing is really dependent on the temperature of where you live. And so after that year and a half of doing that, you know, what was kind of next for you? Is this when you decided to start your app, or where was your yoga career at that point?
At that point, I guess the next step for me was, well, let's start, I guess, when I started to taper off these other side businesses and go fuller force into yoga teaching. And I did my first teacher training. I went back from Texas to New York, where I had come from, and joined my friend and one of my first sources of inspiration in my practice, Jared McCann, for his teacher training at his school, Lighthouse Yoga School. And I went straight to the 300-hour teacher training, advanced training. And from there, I was also married to my wife, Veronica. Well, we weren't married yet, but we were together. And she had been teaching for many, many years already. So fortunately, she had a whole network of connections from her teaching. And we decided to go on a tour. So we went on our first Europe teaching tour right after my first training. And this was a really impactful way for me to get a bunch of live feedback from teaching different types of people, different cultures, even different languages. Of course, I was speaking English, but you know, it's different to teach someone where English is their second language versus their first. Mm-hmm. And that experience lasted about 2 months, I think, our first time touring and teaching. And then I came back, did another teacher training to round out my 500 hours, and then kind of got settled into New York, where I was teaching at Lighthouse for some time. And that was where I really started being a full-time yoga teacher, you know, teaching many classes per week, at least, you know, at least a class a day, teaching privates, starting to teach workshops even locally. Yeah. I think that was the big turning point, was doing that first teacher training and then going on the tour.
Yeah, something that I really am enjoying hearing about your story is how it's like your path is a little bit unconventional. Like, you had this strong practice, you started teaching before you did your training, you know, was right in your 300 hours of the advanced training. And then, you know, going on a traveling tour to Europe as soon as you start teaching is probably something that a lot of people listening are like, wow, I can't believe that you did that. Like, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think there's a lot of fear, like, as a new yoga teacher. And I don't know, maybe you can tell me how you were feeling at that point, but it sounds like you were either able to overcome that fear, or I guess maybe like didn't feel that fear of teaching. How were you feeling at that point?
Well, it's an interesting question, because it tends to have like a negative connotation, because it's like an emotion that brings up discomfort. But I actually try to embrace fear whenever it comes up. When I see fear, it's generally a sign that it's something that's going to stimulate growth for me. So yes, I was definitely afraid and had feelings of unworthiness, imposter syndrome, going in to go teach you know, a tour of workshops after just having done my teacher training. But more practically speaking, just like rationally, actually, for a lot of people, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but the way I was thinking about it at the time is there's actually lower stakes here for me to go travel around from place to place and teach, because I can work out my methodology, I can try out different things, and I'm not stuck with the reputation that it leaves me with, because I'm not necessarily going to go back there again. If I were in New York and becoming like finding my stride as a teacher, then people are like, those are the same students I'm going to continue teaching. So in a way, it kind of actually gave me more permission to experiment and be brave that I was traveling around.
Okay. Yeah, that does actually make sense a little bit to me, which is super interesting to hear. And so since that first traveling tour, I know you mentioned that you and your wife just finished up some travels. Have you been doing like regular traveling and teaching tours throughout your yoga teaching?
We've continued to do it a few times, several times, but certainly not to the extent of someone. There are teachers out there who it's like that's their livelihood and they do it constantly. It's just energetically, like stressfully, too much for me to do that. 3 weeks, 4 weeks is about the most I can really handle. And I've learned that from trying to do it longer than that. It just doesn't feel good after a certain amount of time. And I just crave that grounding and stability. And I'm right at the end of that right now. Like, we've been on the road without a home for like 3 months now. And I'm really excited about having a home base and feeling like I can have a routine. Something that's become so important to me, I realize how important it is having some sense of routine and consistency in my day to day. And I find that even when I'm traveling, how good I feel has a lot to do with how much of that I can create.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that I can relate to too. My husband and I both work entirely remotely. So, and being Canadian, winter is really cold up there and we don't love that. So we travel through most of the winters and we've experimented with lots of different ways of travel. And it's definitely a lot better for us if we have, you know, kind of more of a home base, and then we can have those routines. Because even I think the most, I don't want to use like strict, I feel like that's not the right word, but maybe structured of people, like when you're moving around and you're in new spaces, it's even hard, like if you have those solid habits, to make sure you do all the things that you want to do with your morning or with your evening. Like, it's really easy to fall out of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is very hard, but it's so important. And I think there are some easy ways to bring in some consistency into your day when everything is changing. For me, it's all about the mornings. Like, what can I do that makes me have it? Because first of all, the mornings like are generally your free time. Not always, depends on your lifestyle, of course. But for a lot of people, mornings are your free times that you have the most control over. And second of all, because in the mornings, you're setting the precedent for your whole day. And if you can do something that increases, that boosts your mood or gives you a sense of control in the morning, then it carries over into the rest of your day. Some of the things that I like to do are first thing in the morning, before I do anything, before I even go to the bathroom. A lot of the times, even before I even leave the bed, is just sit up and do a 5-minute meditation on my breath. And that makes a huge difference. I also like to have like a little bit of a routine and ritual around my morning coffee. I don't really drink straight up coffee anymore. Now I drink a brewed medicinal mushroom drink, but I have like a whole process around that, and I stay off my phone while I'm doing it so I can really focus on the task at hand and take in the experience, the sensory experience of that, the smells and what it looks like, and just take my time with it. And something that we spoke about before we turned on the recording is I take a cold shower, which is something that Kundalini yogis talk about, and also something that I learned from Wim Hof method. And it really, really gives you an energy boost. It's like a shockwave through your whole body, your circulatory system. It makes you feel alive and awake.
Yeah, I love hearing about morning routines, because I completely agree with you. I think that it's just a really sacred time, and also exactly like you said, it really sets the stage for your day. And I know for me, I can definitely feel the difference between, you know, the days or the mornings where I get up and I go through a good routine, and then the days where I snooze my alarm and rush out of bed. It's a totally different mindset. It's a totally different mood. And I really love that you have a ritual around making your mushroom coffee. I think that that's really cool. It's like one of those things that, you know, a lot of us really love to do is have a morning drink, whether or not it's tea or coffee. And so often we're just in a rush to do it that we don't actually enjoy it as much as we could.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to enjoy that mushroom coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. I'm a fan of mushroom coffee too. Hi friends. We're just taking a quick little break from the podcast to talk about the one-on-one consultation work that I do with yoga teachers. I'm not sure if you knew, but I am actually a yoga business coach on top of being a yoga teacher and a yoga business podcast host. One of the things that I love most is sitting down with a client one-on-one and talking about their business. If you think that I get dorky about the business of yoga on this podcast, you have no idea until you work with me one-on-one. I love getting into the nitty-gritty of organizing your day, organizing monthly or even yearly goals. I love talking about how to grow your audience, build your business, and add in all the elements of the business side of being a yoga teacher that you probably weren't taught in yoga teacher training, like building a website, having an email list, adding a freebie to your website for your email list, honing in on who your dream student is, what the niche you like to teach is, and creating programs around that. So if this sounds like something that you would love to dive into over the next couple of months, please reach out. You can head on over to mbomyoga.com/consulting to book a call, or send me an email at info@mbomyoga.com and we can chat. All right, back to the episode.
And so one of the things that I'm really curious about, Henry, is the app that you've created. Can you tell me a little bit about the app? And then I'd love to hear kind of about the process of actually creating that and what that was like.
Yeah, totally. I'd love to talk about that. The app is called Henry Yoga. Simple name. And the app is a little different from, well, I'd like to say very different, actually, from the other apps that are out there. Based. It's a one-time cost, which was a very intentional decision to make the barrier of entry, financially speaking, low. So it's a one-time, and then you have lifetime access to the program. And the structure of the program is also quite different from the other apps out there, in that there's not this whole library of content with different teachers and different schools of thought and different styles of yoga. It's meant to be a linear progression for students, users, to follow through over 40 days. There are 40-minute classes on there, and they're broken up by 40-minute workshops. So the idea is that you begin, you start with the first workshop, which is foundation, understanding bandhas, and sun salutation, and then you start doing the classes. Then, after you finish all of the classes, you go back to do another workshop and you layer on more skill building. So you understand more deeply what's being cued and instructed in the classes. Then you go through the sequence of classes again. Then there's another workshop and so on. So by the end of the 40 days, my goal is that, first of all, you have a deeper understanding of your anatomy and your energy body, so physical and energy anatomy. And second of all, if you do not have a regular practice already, that you have established a habit. That was the idea behind 40 days of practice. 40 days is the traditional amount of time for a sadhana, because it establishes a new pattern in the brain where it's no longer has to be a conscious decision for you to do something. It's ingrained in your body. It's ingrained in your brain. Okay. Yeah. To make an app is a huge undertaking. I've been very fortunate in that I've had amazing partners along the way. First partner, of course, my business partner, who created this vision with me and also brought the capital to make it happen. And then we had marketing partners along the way to help understand the branding, the color palette, the naming. And we had developers, naturally, to help actually build the technology. And we had film production partners to shoot all of the classes. And now we have ongoing marketing efforts. We're doing most of that on our own these days, but we are actually part of the reason for the move to Los Angeles is to set up shop there and really have at it and really go full force into this. We're going to create a little office and a media lab to be continuing to shoot promotional content and tutorials and that sort of thing to drive people back to the app. But yeah, to create the app, it started with an idea. It started with a seed. The idea was born from me and my business partner putting our minds together. We met on a serendipitous kind of, it's really hard to say, is it serendipity? Is it coincidence? Is it something? Is it the universe conspiring to bring people together? But my business partner walked into the yoga studio where I was teaching. At the time I was there for class. He was not planning to take a yoga class. He just walked by and saw it and said, let me go in there. He happened to put his mat down next to me and, we practiced next together for a 2-hour yoga class. And at the end, he looked over at me. He was like, who are you? Like, who is this alien who's doing all this stuff? And we just had a conversation. And he was very interested in my practice. And I was very interested in his background. He was a trader at the time. And then he kept coming back to the studio. He became a regular at Lighthouse. He hired me for private lessons and we became very close. And in one of these private lessons, he was like, I have this idea, Henry. I've been waiting to tell you about this, but now's the time. I see that I've done all these different types of exercise in my life. And for a long period of time, it was very like vanity driven. And I was looking for a way to have an efficient workout that was that would optimize my human form. And it took me a long time to realize that yoga can do that, probably because there's so many different types of yoga and I didn't do the one that really worked for me. But I see what you're capable of doing with your body and I see how it's changed your mind, in fact, too. And we need to share that with people. Like, take a look at P90X. P90X like went totally viral because it was an efficient workout that everyday Americans could do and feel like they could transform themselves. And I see yoga as like an alternative path to that same sort of self-optimization. So we should create something like that. And what do you think? And at the time, I had already started filming myself with like my iPhone and putting up little booths. Absolutely. I've been thinking so much about how if I want to be a yoga teacher, like let's go big. We have technology at our disposal to reach so many people. Why should I limit my teaching to who I can face in a room or who I can talk to one-on-one in a private lesson? Like these things have max caps, but we live in a reality now where that's not the case. So I don't know. Some people think that technology and yoga don't really mesh. Like yoga should be kept like its original form and it's unspiritual or something for you to use technology. I totally disagree. You know, one of my Dharma Mitra says technology is a hand of God. And I could not agree more. Everything that's here is available to us for a reason. And so we should use it. You know, with the right intention, it's just as spiritual as anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. Like, I think that, you know, you're in Richmond right now en route to LA soon. I'm from Canada and I'm down in Panama. Like there's, you know, maybe the universe would have brought us into a path together where we could make this podcast episode. But the reality is that probably not, right? Like, I think that technology can be really beautiful to bring people together and to share things around the world. I mean, there's people in small towns around the world that can practice with you because you have an app.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes beyond yoga too. I mean, just look at how the internet has changed the world. Like information is now available to people. The internet is like our generation's printing press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's very true. I'm glad that you were able to, you know, go ahead and make that app and share it with the world. And I think something that people are often really curious about, you know, to people or like from people like yourself who have gone through this process of creating something really big like this is, you know, if somebody's listening and they want to start an app, what are the first steps to even go about doing that? Like, how do they even get started? And I know you said an idea, but if they have that idea, how do they actually kind of, you know, I guess, get the seed to sprout into a little plant?
What I would say is, if you have the idea that you want to use technology to teach, if you want to teach online, then you just have to start. Because like anything else, there's only so much planning you can really do. And I say that as someone who has a tendency to overthink things and want to plan and understand where everything is going. So I know that that's difficult to resist that tendency. But the reason why it's so important to start going, to start taking action, is you actually don't know what information you're going to get from the reception. And to do the thing is going to give you practice and give you feedback, not only from people who use the minimal viable product, the MVP, if you want to use like marketing and startup language, or simply the feedback that you get from yourself, from what feels right, what feels good. It kind of goes back to what I was saying about traveling and teaching in Europe. Like, I got to try out different ideas. I got to kind of find my own voice. The same goes for teaching online. So I would say, don't wait to try to get everything just right. You don't need the full production team that we had to do the app. You don't need the whole branding and naming agency and all of that. I started by taking my iPhone, setting it up against like a yoga block, and filming myself teach short classes. And then I put them on my website. I hosted them on YouTube unlisted, and then created like an email drip sequence that people could sign up for and get them. And there are also ways to do something that is low budget like that to actually monetize it as well. Like, for a while, I had classes that were available on Vimeo, and Vimeo makes it really easy for you to sell yoga classes. They have something called, I think it's called Vimeo On Demand, and it's a revenue share model. Like, they let you set whatever price you want, and the interface looks like if you were going on like your Apple TV to rent a movie, and you can choose whether you want to buy it or have it for 24 hours and set different prices. Like, Vimeo offers that, and you simply just upload the videos that you recorded on your smartphone. So if you have the idea that you want to teach, I say start doing it, get it out there, and see what you think and see what your students think. And that will give you more information to refine and take it to another level if you want.
Yeah. Thank you for those tips. I really love that. I'm a big fan of like better out than perfect. And I know that quality is important, of course. You know, with podcasts, audio quality is important. With videos, audio and video quality is important. But I think that when you just start, it's like doing the best you can to just get it out there. Because if we wait until it is perfect, you know, like you said, we may never do it. And I think that that can be a huge loss, both for ourselves as yoga entrepreneurs, but also for our audiences. You know, I think sometimes we think that it needs to be, you know, that we need to have a film team to get it done. And sometimes our audience just wants to practice with us, and they're okay if it's on an iPhone.
Definitely. Yeah. iPhone can record high quality video too. It's like, it's not that much of a drop in quality.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have an iPhone XS, which is, I guess, the one that was new last year. It was new for a year before iPhone released a new one. And the audio and video quality on it is super, super good. Like, for taking photos, for making videos. I mean, it's definitely not like production team quality, but I definitely feel like it's better than like my DSLR camera was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing. And so I'm curious, you know, through all the different things that you've done in your career, Henry, do you have any kind of top business lessons that you've learned that you want to share with listeners today?
Well, I think the first lesson that I would reinforce there is that one that we just agreed on, which is you have to start. It's very important to start, and not like, perfectionism is your worst enemy as an entrepreneur. Because first reason is what you just said. If you wait to get everything right, then you might never do it, which is a huge loss to yourself and also to the people that you potentially could be serving. But the second reason is that if you go, let's say that you are someone who is super disciplined and you have the willpower, the problem with that approach is that you've gone really far down one path without any feedback whatsoever. And with it was a bit more minimal and subject to feedback, then you might have gone you might have taken that feedback and woven in a different direction. So the sooner you can get information, the better. That would be the first lesson. Second lesson, I think that I'm still continuing to learn to this day, but is top of mind, is know that it's okay to change your mind about things. I'm learning that with traveling and teaching. You know, for a long time, I romanticized this idea that that's what like a successful yoga teacher looks like, someone who travels around the world and teaches workshops nonstop. But what I found from testing it out for myself and seeing how that feels, like really trusting my intuition, is that that's not really the path that I want to take. And potentially, maybe I don't even want to be full-time yoga teacher. Maybe I want to be part-time yoga teacher and do some other things because that feeds my creative impulse. So I think that's okay. It's okay to change your mind and have your identity be reinvented. Dharma is something that I talk about a lot on my podcast, Dharma Talk. I ask people about what Dharma means to them and what their Dharma is. And the deeper I go into my career and just the wiser I get as like getting older and more experienced with life, is I find that Dharma is actually not so much about a destination of like this, I'm in my alignment with my purpose right now. Dharma is actually a constantly evolving journey. Your Dharma is the story of your life. And you know, when I was working in pharmaceutical advertising, I was certainly not in alignment with my principles and my morals, but it was a huge part of my Dharma because that step led me to where I am now. And I have no regret about what I did before because it was an integral part of my experience of becoming who I am. So second lesson would be allow yourself the freedom to listen to your intuition and change and don't beat yourself up about it. The same, that lesson can be applied to business. You know, for our app, I see lots of different directions that we can go if we really want to expand this beyond something where it's just me teaching. Because, you know, maybe there are students, some of my students who think like, oh, Henry's teaching is the best. Like, I really like the way that he teaches, so I want to practice with him. But inherent to that theory is that there are going to be students who think, okay, Henry's teaching is not the best. I like this style more. And if we really want to build a big business, then we want to appeal to more people. So how do we evolve and pivot the business to serve the most people? Well, that's going to involve changing our mind about certain things. You see what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a lesson I'm learning right now and trying to apply with all of the implications that has for one's ego.
Yeah, it's challenging, a challenging part of the human experience, that's for sure. And thank you so much for sharing those business lessons. Henry, it's been so awesome chatting with you today. I've loved this conversation. If people want to find out more about you, maybe download your app, where can they go to find you online?
They can find me on my website, which is henrywins.com. They can find me on Instagram at henrywins, or they can go to the website or Instagram of the app itself, which is henryyoga.com or at henryyoga.app.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been really fun to talk to you and reflect on my trajectory.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great chatting with you too. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomeyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomeyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.